This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live here on Instagram and Pet Life Radio. You know the drill, here for you, here for your pets. Hello, Sharon. And my cloud chaser, how are you? I'm waving. So anyway, if you want to get a hold of me, easy, here on Instagram, just talk away, just type me up. And sometimes I might don't get to all the questions. Trust me, I'll get them next week. I keep a list here of things that I missed and things that we need to talk about. So we will go from there. So, Deb, how you doing? Okay. So while we're getting more people on, I wanted to just talk about a few things. You know, I like to, as I said, I go through Smart Brief, which is kind of a veterinary news letter that goes out to veterinarians on a weekly basis, just stories that I find interesting. But also, I had some interesting cases. You know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I mean, that's true. But it's really weird. I've been practicing for 42 years, and when I see something that I have never seen before, I have to take note. I mean, it's crazy. So I'm sure many of you have cats, male cats especially. You've heard of a block cat. That's a cat who, because of crystals or stones in the bladder, they travel down the urethra and just anatomically, because of the narrowing opening at the urethra of a male, these can cause a plug. And we call that blockage. They can't pee. Their bladders are getting bigger and bigger. It's extremely uncomfortable. I've seen, you know, cases where a bladder can actually burst. I mean, it's a problem. These poor cats going in and out of the litter box, they're meowing when they're trying to urinate. And now, so in dogs, you can see it too. Usually with dogs, it's because of bigger bladder stones, and then they get stuck in the urethra. And again, that's something that needs emergency care. It's usually surgery. In the case of stones in the bladder, we have to flush the stones from the urethra back into the bladder and then do bladder surgery and remove all the stones. And in the case of cats, we have to catheterize the cat. Well, this week, I saw something I had never, ever been exposed to, never seen, never had a case, and that was a female blocked cat. And the reason why, hey, how you doing, Rick? How's Reed doing? So anyway, you know, it's important to know that when you see something different, there was a cat, had a neurologic problem anyway, often had the bladder need to be expressed. The owner was doing a great job expressing the bladder, I mean, squeezing it herself and getting the cat to urinate. Well, I tried. I'm pretty good at this. And I'm sitting, and you don't want to do it too hard because you don't want to actually rupture the bladder. And I said, something's wrong here. So we took x-rays, saw a lot of crystallurea, a lot of crystals, you know, floating in the bladder. And we had to catheterize the female cat. That is not easy. I mean, male dogs, very easy. Males, period, very easy. But female dogs, it can be done. It's pretty easy. Female cat, man, that was really tough. Anyway, cat's doing great. Is urinating. So we're going to follow up with this one this week and go from there. Second case, speaking of my friend Rick, who's here on, and my life with corgis, his older corgi had a little mass on the neck. And we watched it. It felt at first like a lipoma, just soft. It no problem, was not attached. So we just watched it. Well, of late, it started getting big really fast. We said, you know what? At this time, it was much harder, almost like a rock hard. Something's different here. And we had to do surgery. Well, open this thing up. I'm expecting a big tumor, something that I'm going to have to delicately peel away from underlying tissue. We're here in the neck. We got a trachea. We got the jugular veins. I mean, it's the thyroid glands. I mean, it's not easy. And yet we had to do it. So as soon as I opened this thing up, literally huge blood clots started coming out. This whole thing was a tremendous collection of blood clots. Why? We have no idea. So we diligently cleaned them out, opened up, saw, cut away all the necrotic tissue. And the weird thing was we could not find any source of bleeding. I mean, while I was in there for, 40 minutes, an hour, and no bleeding. So whatever it was, it probably bled. It stopped. Still don't know why. I mean, so we're not out of the woods yet. In a case like this, we have to really wait and see. So we put a drain in. We're watching him. Rick just said he's eating and drinking, regular attraction, wants to join his pack to play, is still in isolation 24/7, being watched by Rick, the owner. So far, so good. On a case like this, you know, I'd love to say, great, we're done. No, I don't feel we're out of the woods for at least a week. Very tentatively, I'm happy, but I'm not ecstatic yet and won't be. And we sent these clots out for biopsy. We'll see what's going on. Hello there, Jill. Okay. Bettina, how are you? Okay. Anyway, so if you have any questions at all, ask away while you got me. But in the meantime, I saw some stuff that I found kind of interesting. Oh, this study out of Texas A&M, which is interesting, more than 80% of dogs, that's a lot, exhibit some form of where they show anxiety or fear. They say it's probably, well, it's strange people, new people, new pets, and new situations. They find very anxiety provoking, more so than we know. Now, I look at my dogs. I have five. These dogs come 4th of July, fireworks, nothing fazes them. So I know my little Frenchie is impossible when you go take him out and he sees another dog, a cat, a squirrel, a skunk, you name it, he's ready to go. But I don't know if that's an anxiety. I think it's just his hunting instinct is very, very strong. But some people have animals that are just anxious over a lot. I mean, I see it all the time. 80%, I don't know. I mean, unless some of us are reading anxiety in the wrong way. It could be that just the tightening up, a change of focus, shivering, maybe wanting to hide, maybe running to you for affection. That might be anxiety. It's hard to tell, but I don't think it's 80%. But I do see a lot of animals, a lot of dogs that seem to show evidence and signs of anxiety, of fear, anxiousness, et cetera, et cetera. So if yours is one of them, let me know. Let me know also what are the triggers. You got to find the triggers because it's very difficult to treat if you don't know triggers. So you can't avoid certain. Now, sometimes you know the trigger and it's unavoidable, in which case we got to put them on some medication. Sometimes if we know the triggers, we might use a different medication. I look at overall anxiety and we have dogs that are very anxious. Then I'm thinking about, you know what? Maybe they can use some Prozac, fluoxetine. But if we have dogs that have a certain strict trigger that we know of, then we can do is if we are anticipating that trigger, maybe it's the garbage truck day and the noise is out there. Maybe there's construction going on, but it's not all the time. We don't want to drug them all the time. So then what we do is we'll give them something to sort of bring down that level of anxiety, that level of excitement, that level of fear during whatever the trigger is. But you don't have to do it every day. It might be once a week. It might be twice. Whatever it is, we know it's coming. So we'll kind of treat accordingly. That way, we're not loading them up with drugs unnecessarily. I've had dogs that have been on fluoxetine, for example. And by the way, that's one of my favorite for this kind of a situation. But the owners would say, you know, he's kind of like zombie-ish, maybe. So you don't want to do that to a dog. So anyway, I'd be curious to know if your dogs suffer from anxiety, have you been able to identify a trigger? So if a cat vomited turkey breast, is there a good chance that he is allergic? In one episode, I wouldn't make that call. So what you do is stay off of it for a while, long enough to get him back to his norm. Then maybe a week and a half, give him turkey breast again and see if he vomits. There is tryptophan in turkey, so it might be something related to that, but I don't know if I would want to make the call after one episode. I mean, this is true for me about anything. One episode of anything, I'm not going to make a diagnosis. Seizures, we talked about that last week. One seizure, I'm not saying, oh my God, it's a brain tumor. Oh my God, it's epilepsy. No, because there even when my oldest, now 42, when she had a seizure when she was like 8 years old was her first. Out of the blue, the first thing the doctor says is, it could idiopathic. It could just happen. We're not going to do anything. We're just going to wait and watch. Well, in that case, there was more than that, but even still. So if it's been a few, then, and it always happens. Hey, Steve, how's the knee? If it always happens or it's happened more than once, then yeah, I would avoid the turkey. Why turkey and not chicken? It is obviously they're related, but it's not the same meat. not the same protein. So there's something obviously in that turkey, so avoid it. Daughter adopted a kitten from the local shelter. It is 13 weeks old. She has gotten the first set of vaccines. Since she's older, she had to get one or two follow-up vaccinations. Okay, so if the first one was already at 13 weeks, then you only need one at 16 or 17. That's it, one more. The reason why we do three is because we know that if we're going to start on time, which for me is 8 weeks, and then you're going to 8, 12, 16. You don't want to separate the vaccines much more than 4 weeks. And you don't need to do it less than 4 weeks. When these shelters are placed to do it every two to three weeks, it's unnecessary. Now, with cats, however, what we're doing is we're waiting for that time when the cat's own or the pet's own immune system is ready to take over and make that long-term response. Now, in dogs, then we know it is for 16 weeks of age. So in dogs, I'm going to go 8, 12, 16. I am more comfortable doing cats as well, 8, 12, 16, but there are some cat enthusiasts that say their immune systems are mature by 12 weeks, so all you need is the 8 and 12. But regardless, everybody agrees that even if you find a pet that's 2 years old that has no vaccine history and you want to set up that immune response, you need to do at least two. One, and then follow up the booster 4 weeks later. So if this cat is already 13 weeks, all right, and had the first set by then 12, 13 weeks, then all it needs is one more at 16, and then we're all good. All right. So understood? And the reason for that is you need what's called an anamnestic response. That's a memory response. The first shot, the first vaccine, sets it all up, and then you get the memory response, and that's the one that gives you that long-term protection. Now, it gets interestingly tricky is when you have adult cats or adult dogs, and they have their booster. I boost them in the year. After that, some states, including California, for distemper parvo, for rabies, that's a three-year protection. For Bordetella, influenza, lepto, Lyme, it's only going to be 1 year. So continually 1 year. Many states don't allow a three-year rabies. It's the same shot. That's what you understand. There's no one-year rabies. That's a bunch of BS. It's the same shot, and it's good for 3 years. However, some states don't allow it to be good. Hey, Steph. So anyway, that's why you need to check with your state. Now, we talked about this before. What about your cats, indoor-only cats, you're in a state that requires a rabies vaccine for cats? California doesn't, so we're off the hook here. But I do not like to give vaccines to animals where there's no way they're going to get the disease. Lyme disease, for example, here in Los Angeles, I'm not worried. Okay. Rattlesnake vaccine. If you're not going and going to the canyons and the mountains and running around with your dog off leash, then I'm not worried. So if you live here in the flats and you take your dog for a walk on a leash in the neighborhood, I'm not worried about rattlesnakes. So I'm not going to vaccinate. So you have to, that's why I say a lot of these are lifestyle. Lepto. Now that's been through a lot of changes lately. A lot of boarding facilities and are now requiring it. So in which case you got to do it. If you have a normal dog, now there was a scare in Santa Monica in the parks of lepto a couple of years back, which is why we started using lepto vaccine again. The only thing I don't like it is that because of all the vaccines, that's the one that hurts the most. That's the one the dog comes back in another time and he wants to bite me because I gave him a shot that hurt. So I hesitate to give the lepto. But if you have a lifestyle where they're exposed to rodents that are urinating and animals, wild animals that are urinating in streams and lakes, and you're taking these dogs to these places and they're drinking water, then or swimming in these lakes and streams and drinking water out of the streams, then you should do a lepto. Okay. Next up, I'm going to do one more, then we're going to take a break. Meanwhile, those of you who have not asked me a question, ask me a question. All right. Hantavirus. We've heard a lot about Hantavirus, and everybody's afraid now, and their dogs are going to give it to them. Time out. That's not going to happen. All right. It is really, it's coming from a wild rodents, mostly a deer mouse, and it's in their urine and their feces. Okay. But even if a dog gets it, the dog can't get it. I can't transmit it to you. So I'm not that worried. And it's an issue. So it won't spread to people. And so if you're out there and you're hearing about it and it's getting, See, a lot of times these things get sort of exploded, and there are all these letters and things on Instagram and emails that you're getting about hantavirus. And then it freaks people out. And then they say that, oh my God, it could be transmitted through your dog. No, it's not going to happen. So chill out, take it easy, and don't worry about it. But if you do have, or you're hiking again and you see these wild mice, then you might want to be careful with your dog. All right, don't go away. We'll be right back after these short messages here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. And during the break on Pet Life, we will continue to talk, but give me 1 second to let Mark have his few minutes of commercials.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, we're back. So, after 18 months, after the training, it's going to become a service dog for a person with some sort of disability. That is really cool. And I'm sure it's getting a lot of great press. The dog's name is Natty for the Washington Nationals. And if it works out well, I'm sure there'll be maybe a Natty 2 and maybe a Natty 3. But I think that is really, really cool. Congrats to the Washington Nationals. Okay, German Shepherd. Bitch is a 12-year-old suffering from open pyo. Shall I go for surgery? Absolutely, yes. Any pyo, you need to do surgery. There's no way around it. And first of all, for all of you out there, pyometra is a uterine infection. Very serious. There's an open and closed. Closed pyometra is even more serious because the discharge, which is pure pus, cannot escape, and it's getting bigger and bigger. I've had uterine horns literally this big. Huge, 4 or 5 inches across, and the tissue gets very friable. They can easily break open. An abdomen full of this pus, it's a big problem. Open pyos, they can drain. But the most important thing to know, how do I know that this dog has not been spayed? Because she has a pyo. Spayed dogs cannot get pyometra. Now, they can get what they call a stump pyo, which is not serious, and it's not extremely common. And that is, if they get a stump pyo, that usually tells me that there are some ovarian segment still there. Because if the surgeon during the spay gets the entire ovary, which he or she should, okay, then you're not going to get a stump pyo. So it's very important that these surgeons are getting every. Now, sometimes can there be what's called an ectopic ovary or a segment of an ectopic ovary? So there's another part of an organ that is eliminating, secreting estrogens? Yes. Is it common? No. So fortunately, I've not had stump pyos. Well, obviously, you spay a dog, you're not going to have a pyo because you're taking out the uterus. So there's no way the uterus can get infected. But it's a problem. These dogs get very sick. A normal white cell count can be 17,000. A dog with pyo can go up to 50 to 60 to 70,000. That's how sick they can be. So 100%, the fact that the dog is 12 or 13, what'd you say, 12 years old, doesn't bother me one bit. Don't fear that the anesthesia might kill this dog, because if you don't treat it, the pyo will kill the dog. So it 100% needs to be done. And the only thing that's not a rush, you got to do it today, is because it's an open pyo. But I'd be at your vet's office tomorrow getting your dog spayed. That's absolutely. All right, next. 9-year-old Chihuahua. One of her eyes looks a bit cloudy, hoping it's not cataracts. Any preventive suggestions? I hear. Oh, yeah. Well, you definitely need to get an eye exam, 100%. The many reasons. Now, sometimes when you say the eye is cloudy, and it could be the entire eye is cloudy. That's one disease. But also it could be the pupil is cloudy, and that's normal age change called sclerosis. And it usually happens around 7 to 8 years of age. And so maybe you're seeing lenticular or nuclear sclerosis, but if the entire eye is getting cloudy, that could mean other things too. It could be glaucoma, it could be uveitis, it could be some condition, an infection within the anterior chamber. It could be just a keratitis, just a severe inflammation of the cornea. So that needs to be examined. Whatever you do, when it comes to eyes, everybody, don't ignore. Do not ignore eye problems, because if you don't get to some of these quickly, it could be disastrous. So if you have any problem with an eye, see your veterinarian ASAP. All right, Laura Leash, hello. All right, thanks so much. Yes, you need to go for surgery. It's a cloudy pupil. Ah, okay, so if it's just the pupil, and everybody, all of you, take a look at your dogs that are over 7 years of age. Seven, it could be 8, it could be 9. If you look at the pupils are normally black, which is why I always tell people, when you have healthy young dogs, middle-aged dogs, healthy, check them over. Know what their norm is. You won't recognize an abnorm if you didn't know the norm. So it's always good to just feel them all over the place. Look at them. Look in their ears. Look in their mouth, their jowls. Just be your own little mini veterinary technician and get a good feel for how your dog is doing, what it looks like, how everything is, what it feels like. And then you'll know if you feel like an enlarged lymph node or you see a mass where you didn't ever feel it before, then you'll know there's something that you need to have this dog checked for. So it's very important. Anyway, so now what happens is the pupils, instead of being nice and black, with lenticular sclerosis, actually the lens capsule starts getting older. As it gets older, as we all do, and skin changes, texture changes, it gets thicker, it loses its elasticity, and now it's refracting some of the light instead of all absorbing it all and going through the back of the eye. So you're seeing that reflection in a way, and that's what you're seeing. So that is you'll see a whitish, bluish tinge to the pupil, and that's a normal age change. And now, could that ultimately turn into like cataract where it blocks vision? Yeah, if your dog lives to about 30 or more, you probably would do that, but that's not going to happen. Now, what we do see is out of the advances, if you get a dog that's hitting 13, 14, 15, they may lose some of their acuity, sight acuity in dark rooms at night, going down a dark hallway. You might come home. They might see the shadow, but they don't know it's you yet. They'll bark at you. That's also pretty normal, and that can happen. But as far as complete blindness because of sclerosis, of course, anything could happen. I never say never, but it's not common. What are the ways to keep a good coat for beagles? Well, for any dog, you know, keeping a good coat is, first of all, brushing. Keep it clean. So bathing. Now, remember, dogs, you know, it depends. I have our dogs bathe once a month. We have a professional bather, groomer come in to the house, and we have them bathed. It all depends on the dog. Some dogs have, really, really healthy, good coats and don't need much work other than, routine brushing. It's a good idea to keep their coats brushed, combed, whatever. I have my remaining 3 cats. One is a long hair. He's a stunning Jazz cat. And Jazz has really gorgeous. He's an orange tabby. And I have to brush his hair because otherwise he's a mess and he mats up. And then he chews the mats out and I see the mats all over the house. I don't like that. So no, good brushing. It's healthy. But if you have a beagle, short hair dogs are easy. And a beagle is a medium-sized dog. You can stick them in a tub and just bathe them once every 3-4 weeks. I mean, that's all you need. You don't want to dry their coat out. So you don't want to bathe too, I say, bathing too often only if it's directed by your veterinarian because of an existing skin problem, an infection, something like that. But other than that, I'm not jumping to multiple baths. All right. Sharon, hello. Roger, how you doing? Okay. All right. Otherwise, okay. So next up, next cute story. So, spring, summer. We talked about rattlesnakes. We talked about last week. I did my segment. I don't know if you got to see it on KBC. It worked out really, really well. I think they're going to want to have me come back, which I'm looking forward to doing if they do. So anyway, but spring, summer, algae blooms, blue-green algae, cyanobacteria. You've seen, if you like hiking with your pets, your dogs, for example, and you're near a stream or a lake, and you see this lots of algae, like a blue-green color top, don't let your dog swim in the lake. All right. It's very, very, very important because there is this deadly, deadly bacteria called cyanobacteria. And they just, it's inadvertent. They're in the lake. You know, dogs, they swim. They're getting stuff, their water in their mouths. This could come. There were stories and have been stories. And you may even see them around this time of year, spring, summer, where dogs will be out at a resort, in the mountains, and they're swimming in a stream. Okay. And you're hiking, you figure hiking is good for you. It is. It's good for your dog. It is. They're getting a little tired. You see a stream. You have a retriever, loves the water. They go in. They could be dead within 45 minutes. That's how aggressive this cyanobacteria is. And there are people that have died also in swimming in these streams and lakes and bodies of water that have this blue-green algae. So be really, really careful when you're with your vacationing. Amanda, how are you? And how we doing? I hope she's doing well. I think I talked about the corn cob maybe last week, but this is something that we see. And guess what? Memorial Day is coming up. And what do people do on Memorial Day? They barbecue. So what happens? You have the corn on the cob. It's great. But barbecued corn on the cob, it's fantastic. So what happens is you take the cob and you throw it in the garbage. Usually we give you cut it into halves or thirds, right? Go into the garbage. Well, guess what? Dog gets into that garbage and they love the cobs. I don't know why, but they eat it. And because it's at that perfect size and the perfect length, they swallow it whole. And it's going to lodge somewhere. Stomach and intestines. And it forms a blockage. You get a dog that's vomiting, that is not even wanting to eat. Maybe they'll eat a little bit, but they lost that vigor. They just don't get excited about food like they used to. And you take an x-ray, which we did. And sure enough, you could see the cob. And we did surgery. And dog's doing great. I'm so, so happy. I love, those are the best parts of what I do, is when you could do something that literally, if it wasn't done, right, the pet could pass away. And so when you do something that you know is literally a lifesaver, it's a great feeling. I mean, I know it's a great feeling, obviously, for the dog. They don't understand it. Certainly for mom and dad, they understand it. But for me as well, it's great. Oh, wow. All right. How can I get a Frenchie to stop trying to bite visitors that come to the house? Well, that's a tough one. All right. So Frenchies are notoriously aggressive with strangers. They're hunters with animals. Now, my Frenchie is the classic hunter aggressive. He wants to kill every dog out there, but with people, he's fine. He jumps even on a walk, right? If it's just someone walking without a pet, without a dog, he'll jump up, he'll sniff. You know, he's great. So it's a matter of desensitizing them. So what I recommend simply is, first of all, when someone comes over, you have to put him on a leash and he's got to sit and stay. All right. And if you have to be firm with him, be firm. Stay. You stay. Now, what you want to do is identify, which is pretty easy for a Frenchie. All right. Come visit. That's funny. So yeah, what you want to do is identify their favorite treat, whatever it is, piece of chicken, turkey. I don't care. Their favorite treat. When the visitor comes over at first, you just have them sit. And when they sit, they get a treat and you give the treat as well to the visitor and have an open palm, have a visitor and always make sure the visitor knows the dog's name. In my case, it would be Dwight and say, here, Dwight, I have a dog's coming to my office that are ready to bite me like crazy, but they see me, they hear the crinkle of the bag. They know that sound. They sit and all of a sudden their eyes, ears perk up. They want to see, what am I getting? And I can go to this dog who was literally trying to kill me 2 seconds ago with the treat in my hand, and he will eat it out of my hand or at least sniff it. Sometimes they get so worked up, they don't want to eat the treat. It's very funny, but they'll at least sniff it. So what you want to do is you have to first desensitize the dog to the visitors, and then you want to counter condition them by the treats that every time a visitor comes over, oh my God, that dog is getting a treat. That dog will be sitting at the front door waiting for visitors to come over. And guess what? You don't give that treat anymore. That treat is only for when the visitors come. And so what happens is they will finally start to look forward. But again, this is not going to be done in a day. This is baby steps. It's first doorbell, whatever it is, knocking on the door, having him sit. Once he sits, he gets a treat, no moving, okay? Have the person come in and just slowly, and maybe take the dog out of the way. Don't even let him interact at first. It's almost getting closer and closer until it becomes norm, all right? And that's how it gets better. I mean, I look at my newest cat, Jazz. I mentioned him earlier. He was a scaredy cat. He was a rescue. He was afraid. And anytime, even I would walk into a room that he would run away the other way. So that's a story. It's another one. So anyway, now I can call him. He knows, again, when I would finally touch him, what would we get? He'd get a treat. He'd get petting. He'd get scratching, behind the ear, all the things he loved. Now, when I walk into a room, he comes to me. So it takes time. It's not overnight, but it can be done. All right. I'll tell you what. We are over time. I would, and a two-year-old dog, you should be able to work on this dog. Two-year-old is pretty good. I don't, you should also, how is this Frenchie at the vet? Is he a terror? So let me know about that. That's important as well. So my cloud chaser, how do you convince a macho type guy to neuter his dogs? Oh boy. Well, first of all, we talk about the benefits of neuter. I give a statistic often that freaks him out. And here's a stat. Well, first of all, let's look at two generalizations, okay? Number one, and I mean broad generalizations. How many dogs? Same at the vet. Oh, but I don't know where you are, Sharon. Bring that dog to me. We'll have it fixed. All right. So what? Two generalizations. Well, let's generalize, okay, that half the dogs in America are male or female. That's pretty close anyway. Now let's make another generalization that half the dogs are either spayed or neutered, if they're male or female, and half the dogs are not. So now in any form, any category, non-spayed female, 25%, spayed female, 25%, non-spayed dog, male, 25%, I mean not neutered male, and neutered male, 25%. Okay, there's your 100%. Now, let's look at this. I'm going to give you a statistic. Now, if you see a dead dog on a highway, okay, on the road, street, somewhere, then given what we just talked about, half, quarter, then a half of a half, it's a quarter, what percent of that dog would be, say, a non-neutered male? Well, you'd think, well, maybe see, we talk half are male, half female, half fixed, half not fixed. So 25%. Guess what? 75% of dogs found dead on U.S. roads and highways are non-neutered males. Why? Because they want to roam. They get that scent and they will break through backyards. They will run away. They will do anything to find that female. They pick up that scent and that's deadly, literally. So if you have a dog that's not a breeding dog, not to mention, it won't affect prostate cancer. If the dog was genetically going to get prostate cancer, it would neuter or not. But prostatitis, very testosterone driven. Prostatitis, yes, you have less prostatitis. You have a dog that's going to be more of a homebody. It's not going to want to roam. It's going to be a little less aggressive, possibly. Can't promise that. But, and so I always tell these macho men, look, I'm not running a 4-for-2 special. Okay? You get to keep your two. I just want his two. All right. And they'll chuckle a little bit, but they get it. They're living through their dogs. The dog has testicles. They want to have, it doesn't make their testicles bigger. No, but it's also, I'm not going to get into it because I have to be very careful what I say, but certain races, I mean, human races, it's more of a problem for neutering than others. And you may know from experience what they are, but it's a problem, I guess, with just a conception of maleness in certain people, and therefore it's more of a problem. So my clients, I mean, typically I don't have a problem. My pets, I practice what I preach. My pets are all, of my eight, there is only one female, she's spayed, and the seven males are all neutered, and I'm totally fine with that. All right, so. All right, let's see. Norm without bloodstain on the chest. But yes, he's going to have some bloodstone as long as it's dried up. Around the tube for drainage, yes, that for sure. That's why the drain is in there. So if it's a lot, then I want to see you tomorrow. If it's just, you know, little dribbles and most of this the blood that you see on the bandage is dried, then I'm less concerned. But there's no downside. If you want me to take a look, I'm in tomorrow all day. All right, I think we're good. So anyway, thanks for joining me. Love your questions. I love answering them as much as you love asking them. So therefore, next week is a plus minus. I'm traveling. Depends when I leave where I'm going to be. If it's early in the morning, I may miss us. If I can wait, which I'm going to try, then I will be doing it from India, which is just a little east of Palm Springs. So, all right. But anyway, during the week, you don't have to wait for me on a Sunday to ask questions. You know that. You can grab me on Instagram. Please tell your friends about joining me on Instagram. We'd like to get those followers. And I'm having pretty good meetings with two entities that are interested in talking to me. And they always say, because my Instagram is not that big. What do you see? I have no idea. But anyway, I'll take it. Okay, Nate, see you next week. Have a wonderful week. And let's see. So, yeah. Well, next weekend is Memorial Day. So, yes. Hopefully you'll be there. I'll be there too. All right. See ya. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.